All right. Welcome to another episode of GW Wonkcast, GW's podcast of public policy and public administration from the Trachtenberg School. I'm Eli Richmond. I will be your moderator this evening. I'm also here with Gabe Moss.
Hello.
And Liz Irons, who's our special guest.
Hi.
And Liz is a sophomore here at GW and studying political communication. And you are part of a club that's pushing for DC statehood. Is that right?
Yes. So this past August and September, I came to George Washington's Center for Student Engagement. And I presented them with the idea for Students for DC Statehood.
Mm-hmm.
So, not my original idea at all. It's a grassroots umbrella organization in the district. But I was approached by the head of that, Noah Wills, who went to American University, about restarting a chapter here at GW. So that's been my goal in the past few months.
Great.
Have you found that students have been like receptive to that so far?
I think definitely a lot of students also here in SMPA. As a political communication student, I'm surrounded by students who are especially interested in activism and voter rights and everything. So a lot of my fellow peers within SMPA and poli-sci students are very interested in joining, whereas I think it's a harder goal in trying to do outreach with other schools within GW.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
So what does restarting a chapter at GW mean? Like, what are you guys going to be doing?
And
what
yeah. So effectively right now, I've been trying to collect a lot of names. So once a week, I tend to go in Kogan Plaza here on campus, and I stand out in my Students for DC Statehood rain jacket, and I collect names and emails to add to this giant Excel sheet. And then the university has this portal called OrgSync, and so every week I'll upload the emails that I recently got and send out mass emails asking them to join the organization, and just sending out information in general. So I'm that annoying person who sends out a bunch of emails.
Are there any like lobby days coming up or anything like that, or what's the schedule looking
yeah.
like for the rest of the year?
So as of right now, our GW chapter doesn't have any sort of lobby days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mostly focusing on just getting a good small coalition going on here. So we just had our first meeting on the 30th of October, and I had about like 5 people show up, which not huge numbers, but
to start
goes a long
yeah.
way. Yeah. And so I just want to slowly build that up until at least January, and then kind of reevaluate second semester from there. But I know Students for DC Statehood as an organization itself does plan on having more events in the district. They had a letter writing campaign in September at a local, I think it was Shaw Library. So they plan on doing more events like that that are open to all of the branches.
Cool.
Well, that all sounds really interesting. Unfortunately, we are a policy podcast, so we're going to have
yeah.
to step back from the, what would we do about this and talk about the policy itself. So why don't we just, go right from the beginning. What is your elevator pitch for DC statehood? Why does DC deserve to be a state?
Yeah, so my elevator pitch is just purely for the citizen perspective and the fact that it's about spreading democracy, and it's a human rights issue over anything else. DC is one of very few areas in the United... Well, yeah, it's the only area in the United States without voting rights, if we're not including the territories. And it's just unconstitutional, in my opinion, that the people that live here aren't allowed to express their opinions in anything besides local elections.
It's, like, literally constitutional, but it's
yeah.
it's literally constitutional in the same way the Three-Fifths Compromise is literally constitutional.
Exactly.
It has no...
into the Constitution.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's something
it
that is
that,
there,
yeah.
but is not justified in any regard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, the issue, right, is that, we're... DC citizens don't have representation. They
yes.
can't vote for candidates at the federal level.
Other than one member in the House of Representatives who can be part of committees.
But can't vote.
But
she
can't vote.
She can't vote.
Yeah.
I believe she can speak on the floor, though, I think. I have to check that.
Great.
I feel like I've
seen. So we have, like, half a representative, kind of.
Yeah. And Puerto Rico gets the same.
Yeah.
They're in the same boat. Yeah.
So I'm going to take a bit of a contrarian angle here.
Yeah, go ahead.
If we are just talking about representation, why not pursue retrocession with Maryland? Why not, you know, push for getting D.C., the area of D.C. that is currently attached to mainland Maryland, and restoring it as part of Maryland the same way Virginia did when they took back their section of Arlington?
I think it's an identity factor. I think people who have grown up in the district or people who have moved here for specific reasons, it takes away their specific aspect of home and what brought them here. The people who pay the high rent to live in D.C. chose to live in D.C. over Maryland for a reason. And I think abandoning D.C.'s certain set of laws and identity, just retrocession wouldn't support the community in the way that I think just making D.C. a state would.
Also, you're dealing with a serious political nightmare in Maryland as well. So you're trying to reconcile D.C., its state laws, because our city makes laws as if it were a state, with Maryland's state laws. So that would be, you know, just a colossal headache. But then
but why can't you separate D.C. into a distinct county in Maryland?
Because D.C. as a state operates very differently than Maryland. We have different gun control laws, different taxes, different labor laws, different education laws, completely different systems. Mm-hmm. So if you were to retrocess them, you'd actually have to completely redo both states' state-level legislation. And then you have an issue of representation where anyone in Maryland would experience a loss in relative representation in Congress and in their government, their gubernatorial races and their state-level government with the addition of D.C. So you'd both be stripping D.C. of its identity and then stripping people in Baltimore of partially their identity, but also their representation and their system of laws. So you'd be doing disservice to both groups, and you'd still wind up with a weird hodgepodge thing.
To me, it's not as a clear and viable solution as just prompting D.C. to become a state on its own. And I think a key aspect of that is just, like, the lines themselves. Just what Students for D.C. Statehood and other D.C. organizations promoting statehood have proposed time and time again is a drawing of a district that does not include any of the National Mall or the U.S. Capitol building or the White House. And that would be distinctly separate from the neighborhoods of D.C. So I think in that way, it's just the most viable option in terms of keeping identity and preventing the colossal nightmare of having to coordinate new laws or keeping old Maryland laws versus old D.C. laws.
One thing that's kind of cool about that proposed bill is all you need is a simple majority in the House and Senate and then a presidential signature in order to pass that. You don't actually need an amendment.
Yeah.
You don't need an amendment to create a new state.
In this specific context, because the Constitution outlines the district's boundaries as not to exceed 10 square miles, which is actually 100 square miles because they didn't know how to write things, but it's 10 miles by 10 miles.
Okay.
Not to exceed that. But they don't say what the minimum size is. So you can actually just arbitrarily set the minimum size by an act of Congress down to just the mall and the president, and basically the federal district becomes population one with the president.
Right, but wouldn't that sort of de facto resort to retrocession then, because then you're shrinking the district down?
No, because it doesn't explicitly say what happens to the district.
So it'd be no man's land?
It would de facto become a state, is how that is approached as a legal matter, to put
that
really crassly.
Doesn't sound right to me. I don't think somewhere can become de facto a legal state. I mean, think about, you know, like, back when the U.S. used to add land to itself, we would buy the land and then it would become a federal district, and then gradually we would make them states. They weren't made states just arbitrarily because they belong to the United States. So
I don't know the specifics of this bill, but the way it is proposed is you redistrict down to just the mall, D.C. becomes the 51st.
Right. And I haven't done research on this bill. What it sounds like to me is that you could certainly reduce the size of the district with this bill, but I'm not sure you could create a new state as easily. And I'm just going to keep plugging away at this. You mentioned that it would be unleashing a political tinderbox in Maryland. The problem is if we make a new state, it unleashes a political tinderbox in Congress, because Republicans aren't going to want to vote for giving Democrats two new Senate seats, and they're going to want something to offset it.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're really, so the issue is there's really no compromise there as far as DC is concerned, right? It's an urban center. There is no large rural area outside of it. There's not a large conservative base.
Yes.
A minority majority city. It basically represents all the unrepresented parts of the United States.
I wholeheartedly yeah. agree with that. And like a fact that my boss just brought up to me the other day was that like DC is one of like six jurisdictions in the US with a majority non-white population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that just blatantly makes this so much worse to me as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is the strongest argument for DC statehood.
Yeah.
So I'm think I've gone record, like, I'm not sure I totally buy the representation argument,
mm-hmm.
but it is inarguably a fact that the Senate is an institution that underweights the voices and opinions of minorities
and urban
areas. And this would be a way to get to more senators that are directly representing communities of color. I think we should just be able to straightforwardly say that. Like, the reason we want D.C. to be a state is we want two more senators.
I think that holds doubly true for Puerto Rico as well.
Yes.
I mean, for being a Spanish-speaking majority state, that would be huge, right? That would be colossal.
Yeah.
It would also, I mean, there's other arguments to be made for Puerto Rico around financing, right? Because states are made available to financing that's much cheaper than territories. And their bonds are just rated at a higher standard. So, you know, it would help a lot with reconstruction in Puerto Rico. That argument was made when the district was in receivership, but now that we're AAA, no one cares. But yeah, I think that's a really strong argument.
Yeah.
You look at the history of the district, it was picked because it made a slave owner's land more valuable, and it was a convenient center of slave trade. Like the Potomac and the Anacostia made it really easy to move people and move items.
Yeah.
And that's why they picked it. It wasn't centrally located. It wasn't easy to get to. You know, if they were doing that, they would have done Philadelphia or Baltimore. But
mm-hmm. Yeah. But I just think if we purely cared about representation, we would be indifferent between retrocession with Maryland and DC statehood, right? Because either way, you're getting representation.
You're getting more representation if you make it its own state.
I think
yeah,
so.
But if the issue is
just representation,
yeah.
then yes.
I also think there's something to be said for not taking a Confederate strategy when applying it to how to do with DC.
This is really interesting because I think like that's almost inevitably what we're going to face, right? Because I can't imagine Republicans going for this without an offset.
Well, so the plan was that it would happen in 2008 or 2009, right? We had Democrat majority in House and Senate. We had Obama in the office. There was no reason why it shouldn't have happened.
I agree.
Does it need a supermajority?
No.
It doesn't.
No, because you can do the bill thing to just shrink the district.
Right, but I know we can shrink the district, but can we create a state that way?
I believe you can.
I believe you can.
That's like, because that's the bill that's being circulated right now, and has do you know how many it currently has?
Yeah, I know the support. It has 175 co-sponsors in the House. And 29 co-sponsors in the Senate.
There you go.
So, unsurprisingly, pretty much all liberals and independents.
Yeah.
But it does have a majority of of support.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there is a reason why a Democrat senator would also look at, you know, not want it.
Yeah.
I mean, it does take away their relative power, much less so in the House, which is, I think, why you get much more support in the House. But, you know, a senator, they're going from 1/100th of a share to 1/102nd of a share.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said for that. But I think by and large, people would put their party before.
Yeah, I would have a hard time imagining that small dilution would really make much of a factor for Democrats. But
no. I also think it's like highly ironic that, I mean, I understand why conservatives don't support it just seeing as that the representatives would automatically be Democratic, but it is, like, at the root of it, almost a conservative issue as well, just because it is, like, apportioning states' rights to
mm-hmm.
this specific area.
Yeah, it's the federal government
yeah,
has stripped the
it's
rights
taking
of 700,000
power away from the federal
people.
Government. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my ploy to my fellow, well, not my fellow, oh my, to conservatives here at GW.
Yeah. There is also an international angle. So one thing that's been a strategy of the shadow delegation is to get recognition on international unrepresentative people's councils. So the UN recognizes DC and we can go speak there. So our senators get to go speak in front of the UN and in front of, you know, other parliaments, but they don't get to speak in front of our own parliament.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah, just kind of fun. Yeah, so DC laws, right? I mean, like, they're, the way the Congress interacts with DC's legal framework is pretty absurd. So DC can pass any law it wants. You know, it's a city, but it's mostly a state. I mean, we've decided to call it a city. We have a mayor, but she's functionally a governor. There's not, you know, in what she does, there's not really a difference. So they can, the council can pass laws, and then Congress has a window of time where it can rule on the law and either add changes to it or strike it down or, you know, do whatever it wants. And most of the time, they don't even see the bill. Like, you know, they just don't care. But for stuff like marijuana legalization, one rider that was added to that by the Congress was all gun laws in D.C. are null and void. Not like, you know, common sense...
Yeah.
High fire rate gun laws.
Just completely.
Period. Every gun law.
Wow.
Null and void.
I
so
didn't actually know that
if that legislation had passed, if we had gotten marijuana legalization, you could have gone to DC and bought an RPG or a machine gun, probably a tank. It would have just been whatever you want to get. And so obviously the council did not pass that bill because it wouldn't have worked. But that sort of thing happens a lot where, like, political bills get either attacked or shot down or overridden by Congress. And you got this really weird situation where you have a, you know, minority-majority city being influenced by white male congressmen from Iowa or Nebraska, you know, people that have no right to interact with district politics.
Yeah, I mean, it really goes back to what Liz was saying earlier about it being a conservative issue. I mean, if you were to tell any Republican state that they had to have Congress sign off on their laws before they go into effect, they would revolt. I mean, it wouldn't it wouldn't be a question.
If we were talking about, you know, San Antonio or Tallahassee or something, this would be a completely different issue.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Texas, you know, you wanted to pass a 20-week abortion ban, but actually that's got to go through all of Congress first. Like, that wouldn't fly in Texas.
It'll pass, but marijuana's legal.
Maybe that would fly in Texas.
Yeah, that's true. So were you able to find anything about the...
I don't believe it requires a constitutional majority, so we just got up to that.
Yeah. So, that, I mean, that to me is pretty cool, and that's something that makes D.C. special from Puerto Rico. I mean, like, Puerto Rico is a harder sell because people see it as more othered, not necessarily out of any real worth. They're pretty much in similar situations. They have more autonomy, which helps them pass laws that regulate themselves, but again, they have worse access to financing, so I would say it probably nets out.
In my opinion, the only difference here is a question of, like, democracy. Like, DC voters have been crystal clear that they see themselves as a distinct entity and they want to be a state.
There's 86% support in the district.
Puerto Ricans have not been that clear. There have been polls and referendums on the issue, and, like, without fail, they've all been kind of iffy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, pretty famously in 2012, they had this two-part question referendum. First said, do you want to change Puerto Rico's relationship to the United States? And yes won over no. And then the second question was, if Puerto Rico was to change its relationship to the United States, which of these options would you like? And becoming a state became the most pluralist option. It's not an airtight, it's not not a real referendum. It's like, it's designing the ballot in a way to get to your...
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, that alone, just the fact that you can pass a simple majority and address the problem, that's swift. That's really good.
Yeah, there's no need for any sort of constitutional amendment or anything like that, which I think is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd probably have a lot of people really, really upset.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's really, it's the sort of thing where when I was a kid in, you know, junior high and high school and learning about civics, I would try to understand what's going on in DC as just like a logical exercise, and I couldn't figure it out. Like, what happens with DC voters? Do they vote in the states that they were, you know, previously, like they were born in? But what if they were born in DC? What happens for them? Is it their grandparents? What if their grandparents were born in DC? And I never had a professor that just like straight up told me exactly what was going on. So I never got like a clear answer on it until I came here and realized, no, people just don't get representation. Period. There's not a point where you get it.
No. And also, like, if this were to go through with that bill, though they wouldn't be passing necessarily, like, any new constitutional amendment, it would just be the bill itself, they would automatically, according to their plan so far, look into repealing the 23rd Amendment, because it wouldn't be necessary anymore.
What does the 23rd Amendment do?
I think it allocates specific electoral votes to the district.
What, is that how Eleanor Holmes-Norton gets it? Or for the president?
Oh, those three extra votes.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It says,
And when was that passed?
It was originally...
1992.
It was proposed in 1960, and recently revised in 1992.
Damn.
But continuously also, continuously in this scenario and specific court cases, like, there has been a strict differentiation between calling D.C., referring to it as a district rather than a state. And so there was this case I was reading about today, Adams versus Clinton, and there's a whole section of this case where it deems that Congress cannot legislatively treat the district as a state for the purposes of Article 1 of the Constitution. So it makes it a blatant point that it's illegal to treat D.C. as a state without giving it the actual benefits of being one.
Mm-hmm.
That would also need to be repealed.
Well, no. So that's an opinion that finds that the current treatment is against the intent of the Constitution. Yeah, right. What Congress is currently doing is illegal under that judge's ruling of.
Yes.
Yeah. Though obviously, a judge's ruling can't compel Congress to amend the Constitution. But,
that brings up a whole other set of issues.
But speaking of the judicial system, so we have the federal bench here, but we don't actually have our own proper judicial system. Like, we don't have jails. And now, I'm not one to advocate for jails. I don't necessarily think that they're wonderful. But when your prisoners have to be shipped to other states, DC runs a program where it'll send, you know, spouses and children and relatives of inmates to Colorado, to Idaho, to California, so they can go visit their loved ones, because district has no capacity for housing its inmates. And it also doesn't have the ability to elect judges. So we don't, right? Most states get to choose their judges.
Yeah.
DC doesn't. The mayor doesn't appoint judges. That's the federal bench. So it doesn't... There's this whole issue of representation. And then you get into policing in the district. And WMATA's police force is huge. They have pretty much unchecked power. In the district, there are four main police forces. There's the actual district police department. There's the district housing authority police department. And then Capitol Police, which are pretty much just on the Hill, you know, they're just during Congress.
Yeah.
And then there's WMATA's police force. And WMATA's police force, Capitol Police, and DCHA police are not regulated. There's no civilian oversight of them, and they have all grown exponentially over the last couple of years, whereas DCPD is regulated, it does have civilian oversight, and it has stayed. Its arrests have stayed, you know, relatively consistent, and it has stayed within its bounds. But this federal agency, well, hybrid federal state agency, WMATA, is policing at much higher rates in the district, unchecked. And district residents don't get a say in that, beyond just people who live in D.C. might work at WMATA.
So, Liz, what's the next step here? I mean, do we just got to wait for President Harris in 2020 to have the Democratic majorities to do this? Or is there something we can do until then?
I think until then, because we are really at a crossroads here where there's no forthright, obvious solution to it. I think it's just spreading the word, and I know that advocacy can only do so much, like, it's just basic common sense, but it's something that, as someone from Pennsylvania, I did not think about at all back home, and not even remotely until I came here. So I think what Students for DC Statehood specifically seeks to do is just to take these students from all across the nation and bring further awareness to them, so that maybe if these kids who are all studying poli-sci and want to be elected to Congress eventually have that idea in the back of their minds. So maybe this is something that's not even viable 5 years from now. Maybe it's a long game and it's something 20 years from now. But I think it's something that's still worth mentioning and still worth advocating for and just promoting a greater awareness of. So I just have been talking about it incessantly to everyone that I meet. And I'm never like, oh, here's my obvious quick fix solution, because I think it wouldn't be an important issue in general if it had a quick fix solution.
It's been 200 years.
Yeah. But I think it's something for my plan for the rest of the semester and the rest of the year, it's just to get this rolling more at GW and then just to move on from there.
Cool. So if more GW students want to join you, how can they do that?
They can first, I'll do a self-plug, they can follow us on Twitter at GWU, all caps, for DC, which is also in caps. And then we have an OrgSync page, which they can find within their portals. Don't know how to do that mostly. And then we have a website, which is studentsfordcstatehood.org. You can find the GW chapter on there.
Great. Awesome. And we'll also leave those links in the description.
Mm-hmm. DC Vote is also an organization to pay attention to.
It is.
They're the ones that organize the Senate stuff and the House stuff, so they'll do periodic activist days. You can go up. It's pretty fun. They give you lunch. You hang out and badger staffers.
It's
a good time.
They're one of the bigger ones, them, and there's DC Statehood Coalition. There's a few bigger ones.
Yeah. The mayor's office just opened up a new statehood office. There's four DC city level organizations working on statehood, independent of one another, with independent budgets.
It seems to be a theme. Yeah. A lot of overlap and redundancy in the district.
Yeah, yeah. And there's an issue with just non-cooperation and a little elbow throwing sometimes. But it's okay. If any one of us wins, they all win, right? It's a common goal.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
No. Doesn't matter who gets the glory.
All right, well, Liz, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. And thank you all for listening. And you can be sure to rate us and subscribe. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play.
Mm-hmm.
Not Spotify yet, because they got all kinds of requirements. Anyway, until next time.